Welcome to this episode of Priestly Passion, where I interview priests in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. As the intro just said, I normally interview priests in the Archdiocese, but today I'm going to be interviewing a religious sister who serves at All Saints Catholic Church, located in the Heights area of Houston. And just so that you know, this podcast is dedicated to all vocations, whether it be to diaconate, priesthood, or religious life. I'm speaking with Sister Odessa Stanford, who serves at All Saints Catholic Church, located in the Heights. I'm glad that she's able to take out the time today from her busy schedule as director of All Saints Early Childhood Center education program that they have here to speak with us about her vocation serving. Thank you, ma'am, for taking this time out today.
Thank you, and I'm very, very glad to have this opportunity to speak on behalf of not necessarily just myself, but National Black Sisters Conference of Religious Sisters in my own community, Sisters for Christian Community, because I think we're a very viable piece to the Christian community today, speaking of ourselves as Catholic Christians.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing is, I always start off my interviews with something interesting I found about the parish that I've interviewed at. I've attended Mass here a few times, me and my wife, at All Saints, and the one thing I love about All Saints Catholic Church the most is perhaps like the iconography in the front of like all the various saints, and they have different, it's like a literal communion of saints that they have from saints in Africa, Asia, America, Europe, and they're just all together at the altar. And so every time I come here, that imagery I see is always powerful, and it always makes me think like the Catholic Church is a super home for me. So that's just something I just wanted to share about All Saints Catholic Church. So let's get started with the process. So I know I did some homework on you. Thankfully, they had it available online. And I noticed that you were a Baptist growing up and you converted as a young adult. So tell us about your upbringing as a child, your Baptist background, what prompted you to convert. Tell us about did anybody notice anything in you to say, hey, you would be a good religious sister for the Sisters of Blessed Sacrament. Tell us a little about that.
Well, I have such a journey with this. I was raised in the Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. And my family is a very strong Christian, Baptist, devout family. I had two ministers in my family. That's why I attended the Baptist Church, because my great-grandfather and his brother actually started the church. But why I'm telling you that is because when I became a Catholic is when my mother shared the story with me about my grandfather, her father, being a Catholic. He was the only Catholic in our family, practicing Catholic in our family, but we never knew that as children. But when I became a Catholic is when she decided to share the story with me. So how did I get here? It was like God picked me up and he turned me around. I was enjoying my life. I've never really had a life where I didn't enjoy it. But a day came where I was invited to participate in an interview for a job at Academy of the Sacred Heart, Duchenne Academy, here in Houston, Texas, which is an all-girls school. And at that time, I was still a practicing Baptist. And when I was invited to this interview, I just had no idea that I would be selected because, first, number one, I was African American. Number two, the constituency in this institute was very wealthy, high class international people as well as local high class people. So I said, I don't even fit here socially, economically, and nor do I fit here in my religion. So I said, they're not going to pick me. You asked me if there's somebody that recognized something in my life, and I didn't know they recognized it. I always say to people to this day, Sister Tona, Paula Tona, who hired me to work as a physical education teacher and a coach at Sacred Heart Academy, evidently saw something in me I didn't know about me as a young woman. And she invited me to take that job. It was an invitation. And I took that invitation. It took me about 3 years to realize that God was doing something in my life that I had no idea about. And most of all, what really came out of it was a relationship with Jesus Christ. And as I began to observe the rituals and the sacraments of the Catholic Church and realized the theology of the Catholic Church, I thought, wow, for the people who are complaining about being Catholic, I really don't think they understand the value of what they really have in their theology, the relationship that you can build with Christ hands-on every day by going to communion and being able to understand the sacraments are available to you in that connection with the Holy Spirit, Jesus and God in one space all day, every day. It became a very enlightenment period for me that my relationship with Christ was going to be first and was going to go forth now. I had heard all about that. Of course, in the church, you read the Bible, you listen to people preach. I had been preached to, but I had never been given the opportunity to really, really sit down and be quiet with Jesus. So I started doing retreats, and the sisters there who run the Network of Sacred Heart Schools became a role model for me as a woman, as an educator, and they taught me about the Christian life of being you can be a strong woman. You can be a progressive woman in God's church if you love Him. And their modeling helped me to refine who I was as a person. So the sisters became a role model for me. And I say, God always knows what He's doing. He put me right in that space at the right time in my journey, right? It was about my third or fourth year out of college. And they opened a door for me that I never would have been able to open. So that's how I got into the path of my true faith. God said, yes, your parents gave you a faith, but I'm showing you your personal faith in me. And it became Catholic Christian. I'm a Catholic Christian because God showed me that was my true faith in Him. Mm-hmm. And I cannot tell you how happy I am today to be living that faith.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get involved and take vows with the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament?
Okay. People ask me that too. You know, when we are, I'm one of the few African-American sisters in this city. I think there may be two. There was two. But anyway, what happened was as I began to discern that God was telling me that He was calling me to this lifestyle, I looked at the religious of the Sacred Heart that I was working with. And they had taken time out to set things up to where I could see myself as a religious of the Sacred Heart. But I put a wall up. I tell people that today that knew me when I was a Sacred Heart educator, why aren't you a religious of the Sacred Heart? For myself, I put my own cultural walls up. They didn't. I blocked that blessing. But God kept saying, no, I can help you, even though you don't see this as a blessing now. It took me probably the last 10 years to realize that I was the one that blocked that blessing because of my fear of social economic issues, academic expectations as a religious of the Sacred Heart. But it was me. In the long run, those women became my sisters. They became my first sisters, and they still are. But it was really me that put up a cultural block and said, no, you know how we think, well, I don't want to have to deal with prejudice. I don't want to have to do this. I don't want to have to do that. Because I was a single black woman in this environment. So I decided that maybe this is not going to work for me. So I started praying and asking God, what community do you have for me? This doesn't look like my community. So as I went into research, I found the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, Catherine Drexel, St. Catherine Drexel. Mm-hmm. And what I found out was Mother Catherine had a connection to the religious of the Sacred Heart. So I really began to embrace this thing. She was taught by them in elementary in Philadelphia. Mm. So I realized I was connecting something here with Mother Duchesne and Mother Catherine. So I hung on to that and began to pray, asking Mother Duchesne to guide me to Mother Catherine. And that's how I got to the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, because I began to see in their community, I saw black religious sisters serving, working, and actually being out on out in the open and letting people see them as black religious, and they were comfortable in their skin. And I didn't feel like I could be comfortable in my skin if I went to the Society of the Sacred Heart. And I apologized to them for that because they were beautiful and they still are beautiful to me. I still have a relationship to them. So, but anyway, that's why I went to the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament. I could see myself. I could hear myself. Mm-hmm. And one of my examples in that community was Sister Mary Norberg. she was the one that told me, you have a religious call. Now, no one in the Society of the Sacred Heart actually confronted me and said, you have a religious call, but they did a lot of things to help me to see it. But now, Sister Norbert was presenting at Xavier University, and I was a teacher at Duchenne Academy of the Sacred Heart, and they sent me, and they actually allowed me to go to this presentation. And the presentation was on why Black school educators should become school administrators. And she really got my attention. But it was really 4 years later, 7 years later, I saw Sister Norbert. And we were at a national conference for Black Catholic women. And I went up to her. I said, you probably don't remember me. And so we had lunch and we kept talking. By the end of the weekend, she said, I need to talk to you. I say, really, sister? She said, yeah, and I want you to just listen to me. And I said, okay. She said, you have a religious call. Has anyone ever told you that? And I looked at her, I was just stunned, because all the time Jesus has been telling me this. I've been seeing it myself, but no one has personally directed me in that path. I was a little taken, but yet, no, I wasn't. And I said to her, sister, I know what you're telling me is true, because God has shown it to me, but no one has ever told me like you did. It's like, wow. She invited me to come forward to the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament. And that's how I got to the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament. And I'm so grateful because, like I tell you, God has been doing pieces in my life. The Sacred Heart Sisters opened the door for me to see the life and to see myself as the life that God is calling me to. Whereas when Sister Norbert opened the door, it opened the door to a new level, a new piece, formation as a religious sister. And how grateful that I am that I did receive my formation as a Sister of the Blessed Sacrament before transitioning and becoming a Sister for Christian Community in my final commitment. So here I am. I am so tremendously blessed because my first community was Sacred Heart of Jesus. My second community was the Eucharist, being in communion, the Blessed Sacrament. What's that friend in Jesus that we have? And then he led me to the Sisters for Christian Community, which is the charism is that all may be one, the Trinity. So I've been on this religious journey, if you can come with me. Sacred Heart, Blessed Sacrament, and now the Trinity. I have a joy that's unspeakable about all of this. And I often ask God, how am I going to write this story? How am I going to share this story? And lately he's been sending me little pieces such as yourself to begin that story. Mm-hmm. So I see he's answering my question in his own way. I know, God, I need to tell this story because there's some woman that needs to hear my story. And I know I need to tell the story because I need people to understand that Black Catholic religious sisters are here in the world too. And we're not just from Africa. We're not just from the other continents. We are right here in America, so I fully represent and embody the spirit of Sister Thea Bowman. That's where the spirituality I have, that's who I identify with, is that I truly embody that charism that she had, that the church belongs to God. And why are we celebrating that? That what I'm doing now is I've added to my ministry working with young adults at the Newman Centers. And I do have
students. At University of Houston?
Yes. Okay. And I do have students that I am doing spiritual coaching with. And my whole two things, I got two things that I do this for. Number one, you asked me about this too. Becoming a Catholic, I learned a lot about why maybe we're seen such as a negative Christian faith. It's because so many people only know our theology. They don't know our spirituality. So I want so much when I work with young people, especially Catholic Christian, to understand your spirituality around the sacraments, the spirituality around the rituals of why we do what we do in the Mass, or why we are called to this faith. There's a spirituality that we're not sharing with the people. And that's number one. Number two, is you and I and a lot of the people in the world today, we were always told that education is the key. Well, there's two keys, spirituality and education, if you want to thrive and be a productive citizen in this world. You've got to know who you are deeply with God. That's a spirituality. And too many people don't have a connection to spirituality, but they have a connection to religion and theology. But what is your spirituality? And you need education if you're going to thrive. Mm-hmm. I think it's two keys. And that leads you to have faith, and it also leads you to pray. Prayer is the key to what we do.
Something that we go to next is about saints. So in the church, we talk about the communion of saints, and we have personal saints. I have my own saint that I had when I first got confirmed, who was St. Peter Claver. Do you have any particular saints that you find inspiring in your vocation? And if so, what lessons have they taught you? I know, for instance, Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament is St. Catherine Drexel. You know, she's like the second greatest saint that I love because her story is so me. Like, when I hear her story, I hear me. I hear her. Even though she ministered to Indians and African Americans, I hear her personally coming to my community and personally coming to me and ministering equality and equal opportunity and dignity of the human person that I think a lot of saints like St. Peter Claver also captured. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes, you know, somebody like St. Catherine Drexel an important figure for me as a new Catholic. So who's any saints that you think are super important, and like what lessons have you learned from them?
Wow, I really want to give honor and the greatest respect to Henriette de Lisle, Mother Henriette de Lisle, who is in the process of becoming a saint. Because, see, I'm thinking more aligned with those who are becoming saints because coming in the churches at this time. But there, if I had to think back, I would say Mother Philippine Duchamp, because she took up my cause. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know I had issues as a young woman. But Mother Philippine Duchamp took up my cause when I got the opportunity to be invited to that interview and with the Society of the Sacred Heart. So the reason why I say Mother Philippine Duchamp is because Mother Philippine Duchamp left her country to come over here to start an education for girls. And she got not so good of a rap about how she did things, how she led, and who she was. But I admired Mother Philippine Duchamp because she led and she was hurt, but yet she didn't necessarily allow that to stop her from doing what God called her to do in this country. That's why we have the network of Sacred Heart Schools, is because she came in this country. It was just her persistence to follow the call, her experience in France and being able to come to America, and that she would choose. God had to find somebody up there to take my cause, and he found her to take my cause. So I will always respect her as one of my number one saints in regards to helping me to become a better young woman, to help me to become the educator God needed me to be, become the minister that God needs me to minister to the people. I have now this saying, I'm a kingdom builder now. Mm-hmm. And we're all in the kingdom down here. But some of us don't become kingdom builders. But sometimes we get pushed by other peoples, and particularly the saints, to become kingdom builders. And Mother Duchamp, she laid the roots for me to become a kingdom builder, because I could have stayed at a participatory level, but she called me and said, no, you can do better. You can grow up. Mm-hmm. And then came in Mother Catherine and Mother Henriette de Lisle. Mother Henriette de Lisle got my attention because she was a Creole woman, and her experience with being Creole and wanting to be a religious. And her family did not want her to be a religious. Mm-hmm. Her black family did not want her to be a religious. But she went ahead against them because she knew God was calling her to it. And she didn't give up. It was a very challenging life for her. But she did it, and she had four or five women to come with her to do this. And today we still have the second oldest order of African-American sisters, the Sisters of the Holy Family in New Orleans, because of her. But it was her willingness to not give up. And her showing somebody like myself is when God calls you to something, you really have to pray and you really have to know your ministry and to know your passion. She knew her passion and she followed her passion, but that kept her from giving up. So I admire Mother Henriette DeLille. She's also up for canonization. She's in the process of it.
Oh, okay.
So then comes Mother Catherine. When I come there, I still, to this day, address Mother Catherine as my heavenly angel who is watching over me and guiding me right now through this part of my journey. In regards to knowing how to, what the integrity of this lifestyle is, what I have to tell people to make them understand, because they say, why are you a nun? Or why do you have to do that? Why are you not doing this? Don't you know you miss out on this? You miss out on this? Well, you take the vow of chastity, poverty, and obedience. Chastity is something that God calls you to. You can do it. Just like if he calls you to marriage, mm-hmm. you can do it. It's a commitment. Mm-hmm. Chastity became a commitment to me, so you can do it. Mm-hmm. You are filled with God's love, so you can practice chastity. Poverty is according to how you see it. But poverty is simply being poor in spirit sometime. It's not always about money. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that as a religious sister, poverty has all kinds of stratifications to it. And when we're doing our ministries, you learn that because different people deal with different types of poverty. So taking that vow of poverty for me was basically saying, I don't need everything I think I need in the world or everything I think I want. Poverty doesn't mean I have to be destitute either. So people ask you why you're living that life. And for obedience, that is the essence of being in relationship with Jesus Christ. That is listening to the Holy Spirit for what Jesus is saying, come, let's do this today. So I took that vow with that thought that it's a commitment to follow him, to listen to him. And if it means that I have to allow my body to have a pure intent not to be sexual and do those things, then that's my commitment. It's a lifestyle. So I live that lifestyle, and I love the lifestyle. But it's just like any other lifestyle. You have to make the commitment and live the principles of that commitment. And I live the Christian principles to do it mm-hmm. as a woman. I'm human, though. But always seeking the divine aspect of my life. But I'm human, too. But it really came down to the love of God and how will I make that commitment. Mm-hmm. Some people make it in the sacrament of marriage. Some people make it as a single vow. Some people do it in the consecrated life without community. But it's a commitment, and it's a lifestyle, and I have chosen that. I've taken my vows to that. That doesn't mean that God can say, I'm turning you this way now, you can go. But in most cases, this lifestyle is to be lived.
And we have two questions left. One question is, we are called to be obedient to the greatest commandment, which is to love God and love neighbor. How do you bring that into your vocation?
To love God and to love our neighbor. First of all, every morning I have to start with that. Father, I love you. I'm gonna do this day for you. You called me to it. You didn't have to. So I always have to establish that relationship with him every day about the love that I have for him, because he's always shown me so much love, and I'll go over those things that I saw with him. And then others, it's not always easy, but the thing I say to myself is once I walk on the other side of my door and I lock it, it's all about the people. It's not about me anymore. I don't care what day it is. You know, we all come out of our houses with plans. But you never know what God is really going to do. So my thing for the other is to make sure that I'm open, I'm listening, and that I'm not being biased toward anyone. I can be in the store and hear a conversation. And if it's upon my heart to interject in that conversation, I have to realize they might not accept me, but I have to accept them. Because God called me to that conversation to say, you know what, maybe there's an opportunity I can help you kind of guide you where to go. Or somebody call you and you don't even know why they call you. And you begin to hear their story. And somebody will say, well, why are you listening to that person? They do this, this, and this. I said, no, I'm listening for their heart. I'm listening for what they're really digging for. Where's their passion? I don't have time to deal with their everyday life. That's not what I'm about. I'm about their God. What do they want? So I want them to see God in me, and I want to see God in them. People are going to be people. But we have to be open to it. What I say, receive and give, people talk about charity. I call it receive and give. God gives to us, then we have to be able to give it. But if you give it, you're going to receive it. So charity is about giving and receiving when you say other. So if I give to somebody somewhere along the line, God is going to give me something to receive as well because I gave. God just is a God of reciprocity. He works. It's a process with him. We cannot deny that God doesn't work in the process of reciprocity. So I know that. But I don't have that intent when I work with others. It's a pure intent to love them and care about them. But in the end, I know God's going to come back and say, little child, a little girl, hear this, have this, this is what you need right now. He's going to give me what I need, not what I want. But when we serve God, God gives us everything we need. He provides for us. So we're called to serve others.
Mm. I think that's Matthew 6, and he says, seek first the kingdom of God, and all the desires of your heart will be given unto you. And the last question is, you mentioned about the naysayers who said, why you do this and why you do this and that sort of thing. When we think about vocations, some people think of it as a sacrifice. Or I have to give up something that I want to do or my plans or whatever I had going for me to go where God wants me to go. And so for the people who are like considering, you know, a vocation to the religious life or any vocation, really, what would you say to them about this being an unfair sacrifice for them?
It's not unfair if you see it from God's eyes and you truly believe that you want to follow God. But you have to also remember God gives us two choices. I had another choice, but I chose this choice, this lifestyle. I believe that always when God works with us, he gives us two choices. And we're at will to choose either choice. And how are we going to do it to be our best at it? He just doesn't. God is not a father who sticks us in the mud and makes us stay stuck in the mud. He's a father that works from abundance according to his riches. So he gives you opportunity to choose. So, but you can choose the best if you're looking through his eyes and you really are walking in faith. And if that's what God is calling you to do, you don't really have a doubt. You do it because of your love for him. But if it's not what God is calling you to do, then you're going to doubt and you're going to swing back and forth. But you've got to go with your faith and to believe and to trust and to know that it is God. And it's only by having a relationship with Jesus Christ that you're going to get that. Mm-hmm. I can't tell people what to do and what not to do, but I can tell them that once you start following Christ, and you really put that into process in your life, you'll know if it's God, if it's not God. And that's where you decide which turn you're going to take and why you're going to take it. Mm-hmm. But if it's about you, it might be a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. It has to be about God. And you can only do that by being in a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm. Closing remarks now. Why should anybody... for the people who may have that stir in their heart or feel like I have a movement propelling me to come consider vocation, what would you say to them?
A movement to consider a religious vocation?
Yeah.
You know, I would say to them, take some time. Be around people who are doing what you want to do or what you feel that God is calling you to do. That is the greatest teller. The greatest witness to you is the passion of those who are living what you think God is calling you to live. And once you get around them, they begin to nurture that for you. And then you find ways to feed it. You study, you do retreats, and you do things, but it's basically, the first step is if you hear that stirring in your heart, in your inner self, the best thing to do is find people who are doing what's stirring inside. They can help you. But God always has people. God uses people to help us. So I would say to that person who's looking at religious life, particularly in a woman, go seek out. Do it hands-on. Don't just read about it. Put yourself in their presence. Spend time with that. I had to spend a lot of time with the religious of the Sacred Heart. I spent 11 years with them before I became a sister. So it's really giving God time in that passion that you're feeling. It's just like the artist. It's just like the rapper. It's just like the football player, the athlete. I was a former athlete as well. You got to practice. And you got to be around people who's gone ahead of you. The people who have gone before you can really help you too. Mm-hmm. So it's really about knowing your passion, know it's coming from inside, and then finding those places and people that can help you with that passion and help you to recognize where God is going with that.
Yeah, finding the right people to nurture the seed that God has planted in you. So thank you for your time. I know you've given a lot of great information about like your specific vocation as a religious sister that has been very rewarding, and it's a breadth of information about your experiences and all the things that, you know, you personally have gone through and the joys and all the great personal aspects of Christ that you bring in here every day. And that's really rewarding. And I want to say thank you for, you know, continue to serve every day here in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. And may your role here in Houston in the Archdiocese continue to be blessed and continue to carry out your vocation with love and continue to be a light to everybody you meet, especially those young adults at the Newman Center at U of HTSU. So that's all we had to say today. Thank you, Sister Odessa Stanford, for your time, and may you continue to shine in your vocation. Please be on the lookout for the next episode of Priestly Passion, where I interview priests in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. Thank you.